hurricane ripped through the mountains and shattered the rocks before God, but God wasn't to be found in the wind. After the wind, an earthquake, but God wasn't in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, fire, but God wasn't in the fire. And after the fire, a gentle and quiet whisper. When Elijah heard the quiet voice, he muffled his face with his great cloak and went to the mouth of the cave and stood there. A quiet voice asked, "So, Elijah, now tell me, what are you doing here?" Proverbs 10:25 says, "When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation." There's mixed messages going on all the time. Part of the problem is mixed messaging. I was driving behind a person. It looked like they were a little upset. I wasn't quite sure. I had a sense that they weren't doing too good coming into Darien yesterday, and they had a bumper sticker on their car, and I thought, well, looks like they're having a rough day. And I noticed the bumper sticker was a big one, not this one, big bumper sticker. It said, let's see, what did it say? It said, "Jesus, save me from your followers." And I was thinking, okay, is that an atheist that's angry at Christians? Or is it like in Vietnam, friendly fire when you shoot into your own troops? Either way, they looked like they weren't having a good day. But when I saw the Jesus there, I thought, oh, a Jesus bumper sticker. They must be saying, "Save me from your followers." Mixed message, isn't it? Because I wasn't quite sure what they were trying to say. Obviously, I understood that they were angry, and they were angry at Christians. But I couldn't tell whether they were an angry Christian or an angry atheist. So anyway, clearly a mixed message. There's a TV show that they're going to be producing this fall. Maybe it's already started. I don't plan on watching it. But it was another mixed message show. It's about an angel and a demon who befriend each other, and then they try to work against the Antichrist. Yeah, an angel, a good angel, and a demon becoming friends. What a mixed message. The implication is, well, the demon has some good part to him. Obviously, he's hooking up with a good angel. And the good angel's willing to work with evil to get something accomplished. Is God willing to work with evil to get something accomplished? No. Is there just a little bit of good in the devil? Just a little bit. Somewhere we can find a little part of his heart that's still... I don't think so. I think he's 100% evil. But these mixed messages, they have people wondering about God. Well, does God have this a little bit of a bad side to him? He's only good. And just like we do not believe that the devil has any good part to him at all, it isn't even a 99% and 1%, right? God is not that way either. He's not. He's 100% good. And the mixed message is just what is being portrayed right now, that, oh, we have to cross over and work together and everything like that. God is not 99% good and then 1%, well, you never know. If the ladies made brownies, that's 99% brownie and 1% bird poo. I could try to sell you on but it's 99% brownies, and you probably still wouldn't want one. No, it's like I want 100% brownies. That's it. And God is 100% good. And boy, there's a lot of stuff going around the internet right now about God judging America. And you have to understand that when God judges something, it is totally gone. The wrath of God that is going to be poured out in the very end of days on the ungodly nations that shake their fist in his face, there's nothing left. But God still is not doing it to punish them. He's trying to get their attention when the wrath of God is poured out. There's a lot of stuff on planet Earth that's not God, but it's bad. And people will assume that, well, everything bad has to be God. Not true. Not true. Why? This world is fallen and cursed. Is that correct? Remember that man has to work now? Labor? Anybody heard of a job or a paycheck? Yeah, that's part of the fall of the earth. And it's not going to get better. We're not going to save the earth. I know we want to save the world, save the people. We're not going to save the earth. When Jesus returns, he's going to convert it into kind of like a paradise for about a millennium, 1,000 years. It'll go back kind of like the way it was in the garden. But after that, the earth is destroyed by fire. Even atheists, scientists that believe that this earth is billions of years old, even they look ahead with their computer models and say, the sun is going to expand and there will be no life left on planet Earth. The sun will eventually just burn itself out. It's a fuel cell that diminishes every day. And so what are they going to do? What are the atheist scientists going to do? But they say, well, I'll be long dead by the time it happens, but there's no saving this earth. Even the atheists in their models realize this is a temporary deal we're on. Now, there's a couple of different survival movies and stuff that I've seen out lately. I haven't watched them all, but let's say that you heard all the news reports reported that a huge asteroid is coming to destroy planet Earth, and it's going to hit in 30 days, and it'll destroy all life on planet Earth. Of course, we know now, we know that's not true because the Word of God prophetically says what's going to happen. And in the movies, sometimes they try to get together, the countries unite and find nuclear weapons to try to knock it out of the sky or take a rocket ship out and bump it off course or whatever. But let's say that they report that everybody's going to be dead in 30 days. How do you think you're going to spend the next 30 days? You're not going to be going to work, probably. Well, I'll run to the store. There's not going to be anybody at the store. Well, I'll head up north. There's not going to be a gas station. Well, yeah, they'll be right there. They're not going to show up to work any more than you would. Well, what would they do for 30 days? A lot of them will just stay drunk, stay high, just stay. They'll just push the pause button on their life and just go into oblivion, stay in oblivion. There would be suicides. There'll be people taking revenge on people because they figure, what are they going to do to me? Give me the electric chair? You know, there'll be anarchy. There would be chaos if you discovered there was no hope. If we told you that there is no hope, that this thing is coming to an end, everybody would just lose it. No wonder a lot of them reject the message that Jesus Christ is coming and that this thing's coming to an end. They don't want to lose it. They want to keep things going as far as they can, for as long as they can. Maximize pleasure, minimize pain. Just stretch it out. We have an End Times update on Thursday. Predominantly, baby boomers show up. We don't get a lot of younger people showing up to End Times Update. Have you ever figured that out? Why? Yeah, of course we have. Nobody wants to sit there and listen to the possibility that their life is shorter than they thought it was going to be. They feel like they get ripped off. They all have this goal that if Jesus is coming back, I'm all for it as long as I'm 80 years old when it happens. And I understand that. To them, it's not good news that Jesus is coming back. You think, well, it's great news. not to everybody, not to every Christian. Isn't that amazing? Well, what should I do? Should I go to school? Shall I buy a house? Shall I, if Jesus is coming back, what should we do? Well, do whatever God tells you to do. There's going to be 1,000 years after he returns. Build the house. You won't be living in it. Somebody else will. God told us to build a church, and the time is short. We'd do it. Why? Because he'd use it for something, for the millennial kingdom, for people to meet and have worship services in. We'll be in New Jerusalem, a city that's located on the other side of the planet, and that's our base of operations and our home we'd be operating out of, helping Jesus with the ruling and reigning of planet Earth. He said, some of you will rule over 10 cities, some over 5 cities. You're going to be on assignment and helping the people in that 1,000-year reign after the return of Christ. But Jesus is coming back. Do you know the armies that gather north of Jerusalem in what we call the Battle of Armageddon? Can you imagine what they're going to try to do as Jesus comes in the sky? They'll quickly redirect their computers to point all their nukes. Try to blow Jesus out of the sky like you think a nuke would bounce off of him. Boom. It's like, you call that power? The one who has the power over death, nuclear power is nothing. He's the one that created it. Did you know there was electricity in Jesus' day, but nobody knew how to use it? It was there. No, they didn't have any electricity then. They sure did. It existed, but they did not have the knowledge to know what to do with it. All they needed was some revelation of how it worked, and they would have a better life. All we need is revelation of how the scriptures work, and you will have a better life. These things, storms come, and they think, well, we'll just stand against everything. Well, I'm up for standing against stuff. I've seen storms move and shift and pop up, and tornadoes bounce over places. 9/11, you were praying this morning about 9/11. The terrorists were hoping to kill 25,000. But on that particular day, thousands of people stayed home, had other plans, were diverted. They were so greatly disappointed, they wanted at least 8 times more casualties. And when they got there, it is tragic for the 3,000 people and their families that died, but they were hoping for 25,000 because normally that area is packed out. And people say, well, why didn't God stop it completely? Why didn't he just make them not do bad things? Oh, the same reason that he doesn't make you not do bad things. Some people wake up and they do bad things. Well, why doesn't God stop them? Eventually, it all comes to a stop. You will reach a day that there's no more bad things. You won't be in heaven and go, don't hang around that guy, he's bad. You know, it's not going to happen. You're not going to be tempted to do bad things either in heaven. Well, I don't know, I'm a little nervous, and maybe a million years in, I'll sin. You won't. You won't. You'll have so full knowledge of what's going on, so much revelation and awareness, it's not going to happen. Never happen. Not going to happen, so don't even worry about it. Or 1 billion years, or 1 trillion years, or 1 trillion, 1 trillion, 9 years, it doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. You're going to be okay. But so some people will like to think, well, God is doing this. He's steering it in the path. But you remember what Jesus said? Well, where was that? Shelley just spoke of it. The thief, John 10:10, the thief does not come except to steal, kill, and destroy. I have come that they might have life and they might have it more abundantly. God is the good guy. Jesus was drawing a line and saying, let's be clear about this. Anything dealing with steal, kill, or destroy, that's not me. That would be the enemy. He was specifically referring to there the prophetic sayings of the Pharisees and the Sadducees that were spouting their words and leading people to hell. That's what he was talking about, this fight for their very souls. James 1:17, every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. Every good and perfect gift comes from God. How about somebody moving to Alaska and then deciding, you know what, I'm just going to pray that it's like Florida up here. Not today, but, you know. Or somebody moves to the desert and say, I'm just going to pray that it's going to be a lot of rain and nice and cool. Or somebody that moves to Wisconsin and say, I'm just going to pray that there's not going to be four seasons. I'm just going to pray that it just stays like, I don't even know what to name anymore. I'm thinking of places like Louisiana and Florida and California, and they're all blowing up and burning down. I'm trying to think. I like it here, okay? Small town Wisconsin, we might have a skeeter to get you, but that's about it. Pull off a wood tick occasionally, maybe. Even if there's tornadoes up here, aren't there? Darien had one in the 1880s. Yeah. And I'm not saying we're due, because we're not due. No, 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 no. And I feel guilty when they're heading our direction, but I'm thinking, I'm in Darien. What am I going to do, send it north? Where are they going to send it? Farther north? I mean, south? Just send it back up in the sky. Just send it back up. But I feel guilty. Oh, good, it's passing south of us and hitting Illinois. And it's like, oh, that's not good either. They're good people living just across the border. And if they're trying to send it up here, that's not good either. But we happen to be in a world of weather, in a fallen world that's dying in its last gasps. Luke 21:25-28 says, and there will be signs in the sun. Didn't we have that, just that solar deal? And 7 years from now, another one, a total solar eclipse, the first one ever only seen in America. It crosses in southern Illinois. 7 years from now, a second full solar eclipse crosses in southern Illinois. Hurricane Andrew, its cone curved up and crossed in southern Illinois. Hurricane Irma's cone crosses in southern Illinois. That was where the revival that we borrowed came from. It was southern Illinois that our camp meeting revival that we went to, and when they stopped, we said, can we have it? It's right there. And I don't know what's going on there, but I thought, that's interesting, God. That is very interesting. There'll be signs in the sun, in the moon, and in the stars. September 23rd, they're going to have that constellation that Revelation talks about, the woman with the 12 stars at her head and the moon at her feet and the sun in the constellation Virgo, the Virgin. And part of the stars to come is Judah, Leo, Lion that form it at the top. And the birthing of the king comes into her stomach and births out. All that happens September 23rd. Interesting. There'll be signs in the sun and the moon and the stars. Why would God tell us that? Because some people look up there and say, no, that's just natural. That's just natural. It is natural, but God said there'll be signs there. Anybody know what a sign is? I mean, do you have traffic signs? Oh, I never look at them there. They stick them all over the place. There's too many of them. No, you pay attention, right? There's another sign. There's don't pass, stop here. Lots of signs out there. There's speed limit signs on. They can make them too. So I'll show you one. The reason why they put signs there is because you're supposed to take note of the sign and say, huh, that sign is telling us to be careful or order our life in a particular way or warn us away, bridge out. That's a great sign, you know. There'll be signs in the sun, in the moon, in the stars, and on earth the distress of nations. Yeah, nations, countries, they're upset that they're losing their nations, that they're going to lose their nations. With perplexity, the sea and waves roaring, men's hearts failing them from fear. They see the wind and the waves, and it shakes them to their core. They think, what is going on? Is the world going to end or not? Even if they think, well, no, this thing will eventually blow over and we'll do that, they stop for the moment and wondering what's happening, especially if you're in the middle of it. For the powers of the heavens will be shaken. That means there's a spiritual war going on. The powers of the heavens does not mean that God's throne will be shaken, but things in the spirit realm connected with God are going to be challenged. Then they will see the Son of Man coming in a cloud with power and great glory. Now, when these things begin to happen, look up and lift up your heads, because your redemption draws near. Pay attention to the signs. They're all around. People say, is the world going to end soon? No. But Jesus, his return is closer than it's ever been before. We have years to go. Not lifetimes to go, but years to go. We have years to fulfill. We're seeing all the early signs of Bible prophecy. They're all around us. 100 years ago, you could not say that. 50 years ago, you got an inkling of it when Israel became a nation. We're a generation that has seen most all the things come together. There's still a few more things that need to be done. I know that some people preach there's not one more thing needs to be done before Jesus comes back, but I assure you I have found several that need to still be completed before Jesus comes back. And where they get that there isn't, we've done everything and we're ready any second now, I don't find that. I'm thinking, how about this verse? How about that verse? How about that verse? But they never address some of those. The greatest revival that's ever going to happen on planet Earth will precede the return of Christ. I can find plenty of those verses. That hasn't happened yet. There will be a temple built in Israel that wasn't a nation before 1948. That will be built. There's going to be wars and rumors of wars and more earthquakes and such. This storm that they're having hit Florida as I'm speaking, they're calling it the 1,000-year storm because they've gone back 1,000 years and can't find it in the record of ever having this size of storm before. Even that other one, what was it, Andrew? Can't remember what it was. They showed the size of it compared to Irma. It looks like just a small spot. And it did a lot of devastation. They're calling it the 1,000-year storm. The earthquake this week in Mexico, 61 dead so far? They said we haven't had an earthquake like that in 100 years, the earthquake of the century. But one just happened in Japan. The fires from the north border to the south border, all over the place. You're thinking, what's going on? Well, it's a combination of man and a combination of natural things, but it is not God creating this destruction. But in the middle of it, he's sending a warning that says, when you see these things happen, no, well, God must have ordained this. No, he didn't. Ordain means he's forcing it, making it happen. No, he's warning. There's a difference between the word foreknowledge and predestination. And a lot of people believe that everything that happens must be God. You remember Calvin, and maybe you've been of Calvinist background if you're Reformed or Baptist or whatever. I was Baptist, and some of that, you know, they think, well, everything that happens must be God. Not true. They believe that there's only two possibilities, that God either caused it to happen or permitted it to happen. There is a third category that they fail to take into account. God, The third category is this. God is completely opposed to it. Well, and it can't happen. It happens all the time. His will is thwarted? Absolutely. It is not willing. He's not willing that any should perish. Do we have verses in the Bible about people perishing? Yeah. Dying early and going to hell, perishing eternally. And we say, but it was the will of God that they not. If God was going to, you know, do something about forcing something to happen, you'd think it'd be that one. Saying, well, I'm just going to force my will into position. And the reason why he doesn't force his will, of course, is that to take away our choice is to take away our ability to love. And he's all about love. That's the way he is. God is love. But he's against these things. But they're still happening. Right. We go through things needlessly that if we had prayed, we'd be okay. And I can't guarantee everybody else's faith, that's an unbeliever or a Christian, but I know I'm going to be okay. Remember that first verse I read? When the whirlwind passes by, the wicked is no more, but the righteous has an everlasting foundation. It's amazing. God is not causing these things. Do you remember Jesus got in the boat, Mark chapter 4? The day when evening came, he said to the disciples, let's go over to the other side. Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There's also other boats with him. A furious squall came up. Well, did the Father send that? Here, it's sent to kill Jesus, okay? A furious squall comes up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, Teacher, don't you care if we drowned? He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, Quiet, be still. Then the wind died down, and it was completely calm. And he said to the disciples, Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith? Jesus was in the middle of a storm. In the middle of a storm. Paul was in the middle of storms and shipwrecks. He made it through, didn't he? He made it through. Well, who's causing these hurricanes and fires and earthquakes and such? Well, I guess you could do it a combination of Satan and Adam's sin and the fall of man and the curse of the earth and all of the above. Did you know that Adam and Eve didn't have any clothes on and didn't have a house? They lived outside. It was so nice out, they didn't have to worry about getting a tick or a skeeter bite or sitting down on a thorn. How was I be worried about? Any thorns there? No. It was so nice. They didn't live inside. They lived outside. It was perfect. The weather was perfect. It wasn't too hot. It wasn't like, oh, I'm so cold. I can't wait till the sun goes. No, it was perfect weather. Everything was perfect. Everything. And then sin brought a curse on the earth, and we're still living with part of that. Jesus will restore it and change it and fix it, and then when this earth is done, it's going to be destroyed by fire. After that, I'm not sure. They said, well, there'll be a new heaven and a new earth. That's all I know, and I don't know any other supporting verse to describe it. Where, why, how. All I know is that if it's God's word on it and his stamp on it, it's going to be good. I'm going to close this morning by reading out of the Message Bible, Hebrews chapter 12, 18 to 29 out of the Message Bible. Unlike your ancestors, you didn't come to Mount Sinai, all that volcanic blaze and earth-shaking rumble, To hear God speak, the ear-splitting words and soul-shaking message terrified them, and they begged him to stop. When they heard the words, "If an animal touches the mountain, it's as good as dead," they were afraid to move. Even Moses was terrified. No, that's not your experience at all. You've come to Mount Zion, the city where the living God resides. The invisible Jerusalem is populated by throngs of festive angels and Christian citizens. It is the city where God is judge and judgments that make us just. You've come to Jesus, who presents us with a new covenant, a fresh charter from God. He's the mediator of this covenant. The murder of Jesus, unlike Abel's, a homicide that cried out for vengeance, became a proclamation of grace. So don't turn a deaf ear to these gracious words. If those who ignored earthly warnings didn't get away with it, what will happen to us if we turn our backs on the heavenly warnings? His voice that time shook the earth to its foundations. This time, he's told us this quite plainly, that he'll also rock the heavens, one last shaking from top to bottom, stern to stern. The phrase "one last shaking" means a thorough house cleaning, getting rid of all the historical and religious junk so that the unshakable essentials stand clear and uncluttered. Do you see what we've got? An unshakable kingdom. And do you see how thankful we must be? Not only thankful, but brimming with worship, deeply reverent before God. For God is not an indifferent bystander. He's actively cleaning house, torching all that needs to burn, and he won't quit until it's all cleansed. God himself is fire. Here's a trick question. The whole earth was flooded. Did Noah avoid the flood? It still came, didn't it? Where did he write it out at? On top? Yeah, he didn't build a submarine, right? No, he wrote it out on top. Yeah, it leaks 12 times, and they're going, well, we could make it a submarine. Yes, I have to. No, he wrote it out on top. The storm still came, and yet he was saved through the storm. Paul was shipwrecked. Not only was he saved through the shipwreck, through the storm, but everybody else on the ship, a couple hundred people, were saved with him. Though the destruction of material things occurred, they weren't destroyed. We're witnessing the destruction of material things, and people are throwing a huge fit. And understandably so. They traded their life for the money to buy those things. They worked hard and showed up to work year after year and used that to buy the stuff. And if they're insured, they'll probably might be okay if the insurance companies don't file bankruptcy. They're trying to save as much of their stuff as they can save. But in the storms in the Bible, they rode out the storms, and they were okay. And they rebuilt, and they did fine. Everything on planet Earth is temporary. And we've got some nice stuff. I like nice stuff. It all stays here. I think we're going to go buy a new freezer. It broke. We came in last night and dumped all of our stuff in the freezer downstairs, and God is saying, go buy a new one. I was going to get a guy to repair it, but it troubled me. It troubled me. I thought, well, I didn't want to buy a new freezer. And then God is saying, I can afford a new freezer. I thought, oh, good. I was just checking in to see if you could afford one, God. And then he's going to fill it so there shall be no room to contain anything. Malachi 3 freezer. But the issue is they went through stuff and they lost material stuff, but they were saved through it and they helped save people with them. We are not going to save America, but we will save Americans. America's not eternal. There's a final day that it will exist. And I don't know how far down the road that is, but there's going to come a day that America ceases to exist in this democratic political form. Someday that's coming. This is not eternal, but the people in it are. America will be destroyed with the rest of the earth when it's burnt up. And right now, the death throes of the earth is what we're witnessing, some of that. God can replace stuff. He can make it better than it ever was. When you work under the blessings of God, every time something breaks in your life, whether it be a refrigerator or a truck or you need a couch or whatever, God always upgrades. And by the time 6 months down the road you turn around, you realize it's better than it was before. I didn't want that truck to break down, but I've got a better vehicle now. I've got a better house, a better couch, a better refrigerator, better. I just assume that it's going to be better. I don't like going through it with stuff, the inconvenience of stuff breaking down and having to replace it. My brain said, man, I could have spent it on this or that, but it's always better. My life always gets better. I'm just getting used to getting better all the time. All the time. So that's, I don't know what's going to be destroyed. I suspect with where the hurricane is right now, what my heart is? God, save the people. May they turn to you. May they cry out to you. May they receive the miracles in their life. And after this, may it be a life-changing event. And may their lives after this be better than it was before. Their house is better than it was before. The house that may have blown away is replaced by a new one that they walk in and go, wow, or yay. Why not? Why not better? What was meant for destruction, why not better? It's inconvenient to rebuild. It's inconvenient to shop for another freezer. I might have to trip over an ice cream cone on the way. What? Who was? Ekam and Robin lost everything, didn't they?
They were funded to go to Tulsa, and then the school was paid for, and then they went back, and their life has never been the same. Yeah, been terrific.
They lost everything. I don't think they had insurance either, did they? They lost everything. And so somebody paid for them to go to Raymond. They came back, and what a different life they have now, traveling the world. Daughter to ORU. I mean, Katrina was a huge inconvenience. Yeah. Bless God. Has God heard our words today? Do they mean anything to him in heaven? Absolutely. Why would he covet our hearts and our words and our prayers today? Because it gives him that open legal access to the destruction that's going on. That even though the world will look at it and say, oh, isn't that awful? We need to look beyond that to say the blessings of God is going to take these families and bring them to a new level. They will learn how to survive and trust God through it all. You're saying, well, why don't you just pray that all the destruction stops? Remember that one guy came into church at one time, we were having a prayer group? Pastor, I want you to pray that all anger ends in the entire world. I didn't have the faith. But I understood where the source of anger comes from. And I said, I can't pray for that. And he stood there and he pointed his finger and he yelled. And that's why your church will never grow. Because I won't pray. He was trying to put a curse on me, you know. Because I won't pray for all the anger in the entire world to suddenly disappear. Anybody ready to pray that? No, because you know you. You know you. Anyway, bless God. We're long past the sermon. I've already realized that. So we're going to close and be dismissed. Heavenly Father, you are the best. You are the giver of every good thing. And we declare from these words, all of them that were spoken this morning, that you have access into the lives of the people, that you will show yourself strong, show yourself love, help them to survive, recover, and go on and be so far beyond that there'll be testimony by the millions. Glory given to you, saved out from a fallen world. In Jesus' name, amen.